What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode here on the Smack Hospitality Podcast. And this episode is in partnership with our friends from Questex and the International Hospitality Investment Forum, EMEA, here in Berlin. For this episode, we went to the famous Adlon Hotel to speak with the group CEO of Kempinski, Barbara Muckermann, on what she calls the ocean of brands, Kempinski's legacy and future, and what she found in her first 2 years with the company. Enjoy the show. Before we jump in, meet our sponsor for this episode, Room Price Genie, the award-winning RMS trusted by hotel groups and independents alike. Sure, they started in one indie hotel, but fast forward to today, they're powering 3,000 plus hotels and groups across 65 countries. Not bad for a genie, right? And here's the kicker. In the DACH region alone, they're working with 900 plus properties, and nearly 40% of those are hotel groups. Whether you've got one hotel or a whole empire, the Genie scales with you, no magic lamp required. Their autopilot reacts instantly to demand, events, and competitor moves, giving you smarter pricing with way less effort while you stay totally in control. And they're not just software. They're a trusted advisor who actually helps you tackle demand spikes and seasonality. They've priced over 55 million Genie nights, rock a 98% recommendation rate, and took home number one RMS at the Hotel Tech Awards 2026. If you want pricing that just works, go on, let the Genie handle it.
Barbara, nice to have you on Smack. Thank you so much for making the time between IHIF, coming back to the Adlon, back to IHIF afterwards. So thank you, first of all. It's great to see you again. I wanted to start with a very easy question for you. You've been, if my maths is correct, you're approaching 2 years with the company, correct? Yeah, okay. If you were to summarize the 2 years in a couple of sentences, what's it been like? Because I feel like so much has happened since you came on board. Take a step back for me and summarize it.
So thank you. It's a privilege to be here on Smack Podcast today. And I have to say, maybe one world is really full.
Yeah.
And I have to say, full of opportunity, joy, amazing people.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest difference that I found in moving from the cruise industry to the hotel industry is really the incredible passion of the people.
Yeah.
It's, Kempinski has more than 20,000 employees around the world. So it's a huge embrace. It's a full embrace that I got. It is interesting. The opportunity is enormous. I always realized the strength of the Kempinski brand. I didn't feel the power of the Kempinski brand until I was really allowed to start playing with it.
A little bit around, yeah. And we'll talk about the playing that you've done in just a second. If we look at kind of the luxury space, Barbara, I think a lot has changed there as well, especially recently. I would love to start the podcast with you by talking a little bit about luxury and your perception of it. As you just said, you come from the cruise, from the luxury cruise industry. I was wondering, where do you feel luxury is at right now? Is it still the same as it used to be? Has the perception of it changed? Where are we with luxury?
So, first of all, if we are looking at the evolution of luxury, you realize that luxury has never stopped changing. Mm. So luxury, you know, started with the first tailors, you know, Valentino, you know, and these guys who, you know, Ferragamo, who started creating craftsmanship.
Yeah.
And then we got into what we call the massification of luxury, in which from this one brand, you started selling a lot of different products and you got these huge conglomerates.
Yeah.
And where we are finding it today is actually in a complete different space because luxury was born out of homogeneous markets.
Yeah.
It started, it was born at the court of Versailles because you had a lot of people with a lot of money that were very bored.
Yeah.
That's where luxury started. So today, we actually, if we are looking at the world of luxury, first of all, you have developed markets, but you also have a lot of emerging markets.
Yeah.
And each one of them is in a different stage.
Yeah.
Of their luxury journey, if you want. So the way I like to define luxury is always by saying that it's really, luxury is really that complement of emotional and functional benefits that will really allow to any company to increase the willingness to pay of the customer.
Okay.
So if we are looking at hospitality, what is luxury today? Luxury for me are things that are unique. Mm. Because one of the things that I was reflecting on, I am paid to understand this industry. Mm. Well, I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
And still today, I don't have in my mind a clear idea of what's the difference between most of the luxury brands in the hotel industry.
Yeah. And brands is a good point. Let me dive into that. Is that maybe the advantage or one of the advantages potentially of Kempinski? Because you guys can focus on that one core thing that makes you very strong, as opposed to one of the, and no, you know, no front to any of the big kahunas. They have sometimes three or four luxury brands, which probably makes the mission of brand identification more complicated. Would you agree?
Can I challenge you on that?
You should.
I think there's a lot of logos in the industry. I think there's very few brands.
Okay.
Because
you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
you know, you're only a brand if not everybody likes you and if you stand for something.
Mm.
If you are a logo, you represent a set of attributes.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very different.
Yeah.
You know, so so you immediately know that something is a brand if not everybody likes it.
Okay.
And it is very well defined. Now, if we are looking at the incredible growth of luxury hospitality post-COVID, you have a lot of new logos that are all explaining different sets of functional benefits.
Yeah, very interesting.
I would dispute that many of these are not brands.
Mm. So what defines the Kempinski brand? Let me challenge you.
Of course. So this was the most fun part of my job in the last 2 years. It was really rediscovering the Kempinski brand. And this is why, the reason why I was professionally attracted to Kempinski is that I'm born as a brand commercial person. Mm. You know, then I had to do a lot of operations and finance in my life. But that's really my passion that wakes me up in the morning. And, you know, I remember one of my professors at the university was always asking a question, was always asking, how long will it take to rebuild a 100-year-old heritage brand? Mm-hmm. In reality, a 100-year-old heritage brand, you need 100 years to rebuild it.
Wow.
Why? Because you have all of this brand depth and history, which really allows you as a marketer today to take in from your history, build the future with what is relevant to the consumer today. But we know exactly who Kempinski was.
Yeah.
We know exactly what Kempinski is today. Mm. Well, if we are building a new brand, which we can do in half an hour, using any of the marketing schemes, you are missing that gravitas and those roots, which means that, you know, you remain a logo. So Kempinski, in going really back to the essence, since the beginning, what it always did, it always allowed you to have a good time.
Yeah.
That's why we like to say it is really the brand of the good life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, think about it. You know, we're here in Berlin today.
Yeah.
Berlin, you know, 100 years ago was the place to be.
Mm.
But it was not necessarily the same. It wasn't Saint-Tropez. Okay?
Yeah.
People were drinking beer.
Yeah.
You know, were not moving a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and Germans, let's be honest. I mean, I'm half German, so I can officially say that. You know, Germans needed to be taught how to enjoy life.
Yes.
And Kempinski arrived and gave them permission to enjoy.
Yeah.
And that's when really Berlin erupted. So Berlin, you know, in the Berlin of Kempinski, Germans were allowed to drink beer.
Yeah.
They were allowed to drink beer by the glass, which means you feel like having a glass of champagne at 11 o'clock, go for it.
Yeah.
They were added food to that glass, you know, was importing oysters, imported the first avocados, you know.
Yeah.
And so it created the shows together with the dinner. Again, it was this joy.
Mm.
I was talking to an architect about a project the other day, and they said, when Kempinski arrives in a new city, I want you to portray that same feeling that we had as kids when the circus was arriving in town before Christmas.
Yeah.
It's that sense of joy. Now we're going to all celebrate together in family. That's what Kempinski is doing in a city.
I would love to hear, Barbara, when you were first approached, whenever that was, when you were first approached and the discussion started of you potentially joining Kempinski, what was your first thoughts? Because I'm sure you knew the brand, you have heard of it, you probably had looked at, you maybe had stayed at one. But what was your first thoughts when somebody came to you and said, could this be something you would be interested in?
Honestly, unique opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because I had, so... Silver Sea was a 35-year-old brand.
Yeah.
Loro Piano, okay, even if we were going to the grandfather, we were reaching maybe 60, 70-year-old.
Yeah.
MSC and even younger. Mm. So I had never worked for a real heritage brand.
Yeah.
And that, for me, was really the incredible opportunity. At the same time, what I really liked about hotels is that, you know, not much changed in the last 200 years in the hotel industry.
Yeah,
so I thought this is really a huge opportunity to take some of the learnings of the high experience environment that we could provide in cruise and bring them back to hotels and hospitality.
Yeah.
And so for me, this was really the professional opportunity.
Very cool. And then once you joined the hotel business, I'm sure, and I know from, shout out to Kirsty, by the way, for organizing this, that you've been traveling around quite a bit, meeting a lot of the portfolio, meeting owners, meeting the staff and so on and so forth. And while you were doing that, what kind of a sense did you get from the team? I'm sure every time there's a change in leadership, especially in the number one position, there's always some form of excitement or probably also expectation that you know, things develop or move forward. How do you manage that? Because it's not like you, when we talked briefly in Brussels in the summer when we saw each other, I remember you saying, it's not like I'm coming in and changing everything right away because I need to, first of all, understand and see what's happening.
So for me, meeting the people of Kempinski was the first proof point that we were talking about a brand and not a logo.
Mm.
Because even in years in which brand manuals were forgotten, you know, standard operating procedures had not evolved, you know, and let me say, all of that corporate apparatus that helps a brand becoming alive in its daily externalities, even without nurturing that a lot, wherever you were getting into a Kempinski, and it applies to here, to China, to wherever, you really see how that good life, how that desire to deliver the good life and hospitality, really, it's something that is almost orally transmitted from staff member to staff member.
Mm.
That happens because people who are close to Kempinski understand Kempinski.
Mm.
You know, and that goes back to creating a brand, you know, on a table versus having this living, you know, this living heritage that is much more interesting and fertile. It's like a Petri dish. It's a beautiful Petri dish.
There's a lot going on in that Petri dish.
Exactly.
Tell me this then, Barbara. If we look at Kempinski and the development over the years, and obviously it's been, let's say, an exciting, positively speaking, an exciting 10, 15 years for Kempinski with a lot of change as well. I was wondering whether one of the things when you looked or when you came in and spoke to the people, did you feel like one of the things that you were going to bring was a little bit of calmness as well? Not just perhaps to Kempinski, but also the industry has been, you know, there's a lot going on in the industry. Brands being converted, bought left, right and center. There's a lot happening. Is maybe calmness sometimes a good thing to have?
It's fundamental.
Yeah.
You need continuity. I mean, I'm merely a custodian of this brand for a number of years.
Yeah.
You know, and as we know, Kempinski, you know, has had a lot of change, has too much change.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you're looking at strategy, I always say it's not really important to know where you're going, but it's going consistently in the same direction.
That would help. Because otherwise
you're zigzagging and it's a mess.
Yeah, yeah. So. And then if we look at the luxury hotel industry, it was a very obvious thing that's happening at the moment that Kempinski is not doing and maybe not yet doing. So I'll love to hear from you. There's a lot of talk in the town at the moment about creating hospitality or hotel experiences that are not in hotels, planes, trains, cruise lines, big yachts and so on and so forth. How does Barbara feel about that, number one? And then how does Kempinski feel about that?
So I will say something that probably will not necessarily agree with everyone.
That's okay.
I think that one of the biggest diminutions of Kempinski we've done was reducing it to hoteliers since 1897. Kempinski always created an ecosystem of the good life. It could have been an hotel. It invented the first resort in the world, for example. You know, but it was not just limited to that.
Mm.
And so for me, the first thing is you need to go back to who you are and what is your credential, what is your brand territory. Yeah. So would it make sense for Kempinski to start opening restaurants, or start doing, for example, tours to the countryside?
Yeah.
Well, we were used to do that 150 years ago, so it makes sense inside. What is my brand?
Yeah.
You know, so whenever you're looking at so-called brand extensions, it depends who you are and can you really claim a stake on it?
Mm.
So I remember when I arrived at Silver Sea many, many years ago, I got very upset because I found the Silver Sea champagne.
Oh.
And I'm like, we don't have any brand claim towards a champagne.
Yeah, okay.
On the other side, can I tell you tomorrow, I will welcome the Kempinski wine because that's how Kempinski started.
Yeah.
You know, we used to own vineyards.
Yeah.
And we were the first to bring. So for
so
us, it would be legitimate.
Mm.
You know, we would have the supporting evidence to do it.
Yeah.
And so I think that any time you do a brand extensions are great.
Mm.
If you as a brand can really help your guests or your customers to resolve more problems through you.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the legitimacy to move there,
you
shouldn't do it because you're just decreasing the value of your brand.
Mm.
So the answer is it depends.
Okay. And I will keep watching the space if there's some news coming. if we look at markets, Barbara, obviously, you know, we all know where part of the Kempinski portfolio is and where you guys are strong and where you guys are potentially looking. You said something at the very beginning that I thought was quite interesting about emerging markets and developed markets. Obviously, now we have quite a few developed markets and only a few emerging markets left. Tell me a little bit more about how you are feeling about these markets. Now, set aside geopolitical differences because we know there's a lot going on.
Sure.
But where do you feel like there's opportunity? There's a lot of talk in the town about Africa at the moment. There's still a lot of talk in the town about parts of Asia. How do you see all of that?
So, again, I will always go back to the same recipe.
Yep.
You always need to build on your strengths and foundations.
Yeah.
So, Kempinski is a German brand.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, Germany is the largest international travel market in the world.
Mm.
So it is absolutely great to be the first German luxury
in
brand.
In that space. Yeah,
so
yeah, very good.
That is definitely a source market advantage that I want to keep and exploit more.
Mm.
Then the second market for Kempinski is the United States.
Yeah.
Americans don't travel as much as Germans, not at all. They're much more domestic,
but
they spend much more money when they do.
Yeah, that, which is
and
good
there
news.
Are more people.
Which is good
so
news. Yeah.
We like the American source market.
Mm.
Okay. Then there are another two source markets in which globally Kempinski is very strong.
Mm.
One is the GCC because we were pioneers in opening in the Middle East, which again is a very affluent, very sophisticated customer, which is great to have. And of course, the Brits. The Brits are the one that never scare.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, the Brits...
The Brits are going.
The Brits are going.
Yeah.
So you always
going.
Want to have Brits in your source market mix.
Shout out to Great Britain.
And then on the side, we have the Chinese. So Kempinski still today is the largest international brand in China.
Yeah.
You know, we were the pioneers. We were the first. And still today, we have 23 open houses in China. So let's not forget the Chinese because they are the second largest economy in the world. And I assure you that they will start traveling very soon.
They will come back,
So considering that these are the strengths of Kempinski, when we started looking at development strategy, you know, and I really go to my Christmas wish list of where would I like to have hotels in the future, I started thinking about where do these people want to go.
Yeah.
So I can tell you that I'm very interested in having more leisure hotels.
Yeah.
You know, historically, Kempinski has had more than 70% of the keys, which were more business city keys.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing wrong with it,
but
we need more leisure.
Okay.
Leisure extends the average stay, and it's a different game.
Yeah.
I want more European houses, both capitals as well as leisure.
Okay.
And at some point, we will need to understand how to put more Kempinski in front of this beautiful American source market, which happens to be the richest source market in the world. So this is if I need to give a trajectory for business development.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, of course, I need to consider what are my current engines of growth that I want to consolidate.
Yeah.
China, Southeastern Asia, and the Middle East.
Yeah.
So if with just this, I will be busy for the next 5 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't look like you're you'll not be bored for sure. No, I see that. Barbara, if we look at talking a little bit about you, if we look at kind of what you've done in your past, and you've talked about it already with Silver Seas, which I think was in the news a lot, but also if we go back through your career a little bit further, how much influence has the luxury fashion space had on the hospitality industry? And I feel like you're the perfect person, because it's a question I hear a lot, especially to CEOs. I feel like you're probably one of the better people to ask, because you might know, because you've been in both. So tell me, and the reason I ask is a very purposeful one, because not too long ago on this podcast, we had the CEO of the Karl Lagerfeld brand on this podcast, who's doing the other way around. He's done some branded residences, one in Dubai more recently. They have one in Macau for quite some time. So not too far away from your source market as well. Obviously, they only have two. And he said, actually, from the outside, it might not seem that way, but there's a lot more connection between luxury fashion and luxury hospitality than people might assume. Would you agree?
I would agree, but I would not use the word fashion.
Okay.
I would use the word retail.
Yeah.
Because particularly when you're thinking about luxury, it's really about that timeless elegance.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't like the word fashion is because, particularly in fast fashion, it almost feels like what is good taste is continuously recycled every 3-4 months.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
So if you're really talking about luxury, you know, luxury, it lives much more than a fashion collection.
Yeah. Okay. So, and is that something, and that's where I'm heading with the question, something that's a big topic as well at the moment everywhere is these partnerships with brands that are potentially not within the hospitality space.
So,
something you would consider?
Very, very interesting point. And I think there are two aspects to consider here.
I'm all ears.
Again, but let's not go into then the difference in geographies and emerging markets.
Yeah.
But broadly, you have two ways of building a brand. Either you build your brand on your history and you keep building, keep repeating the same three things three times. And then eventually people realize, oh, guess what? That's Hermès.
Yeah.
Everybody immediately knows, perceives, without having to add a tagline, what Hermès is.
Yes. Yeah.
Hermès has not done any partnership in history.
Yeah.
I think the only one was for the Apple Watch.
Yes, I remember
that. In which
they
actually lent their ledger, their overpriced ledger, just for that. There's no partnerships because, like Loro Piana, these are brands that know exactly who they are.
Mm.
They are timeless, and they just go forward repeating the same thing.
Yeah.
There's no partnerships.
Mm.
Then on the other spectrum, you have more fashionable brands that churn faster. And in these cases, creative collaborations more than partnerships can create a lot of magic because you have brands that are less regimented, let me say, in their way and history, and are much more ready to experiment and create magic. Vuitton did that. I'm afraid I'm older than you, but I remember when
5 years max, not more.
I remember when Vuitton put Jennifer Lopez on an advertisement.
Mm.
All of the timeless luxury industry was shocked,
outraged.
Because I'm like outraged.
Yeah.
I mean, you're putting Jennifer Lopez
on Louis Vuitton.
Can I say that was a pivotal moment for the brand because they really increased their relevance, their size enormously by embracing these kind of collaborations, you know, because they realized that the brand was strong enough to hold it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is one key aspect of partnership. On the other hand, partnerships also depend a lot of where you are in the world.
Mm. Okay.
Because if for European source markets and guests, typically, the logos are on the inside.
Mm.
You don't need as much logos shown.
Outside, yeah.
While emerging markets that are still learning, you know, they're still at the beginning of their journey as consumers, they want to have bigger logos.
So which of the two is Kempinski? Would you be more the Loro Pianas of the world, or would you be more the Louis Vuittons of the world?
So I will definitely be a Loro Piana of the world.
Okay.
But there is a big difference.
Mm.
And this is where, to your previous question, all of these retail brands or luxury brands that are trying to get into hospitality, what could go wrong? Mm. So the reality is that the reason why these brands are so good at keeping their perfection, their etherealism, you know, their brand essence, is that typically the interaction between the brand and the customer is very, very fast.
Yeah.
I desire a pair of shoes. Mm. You know, I go to the shop, the man immediately feels sexy because you're like, I become luxury. By consuming luxury, I walk out of the store and the whole thing was maximum 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's very easy to maintain perfection for 40 minutes. Mm. You get into hospitality.
It takes a bit longer.
You're staying 3 to 7 days in the hotel.
Yeah.
The waiter had a bad day. Outside is raining. The plane was delayed. Let me say, it's much more difficult to keep the bubble.
Yeah.
Because hospitality is the real world. Mm. And this is where I think that if you take some of these amazing brands that are very fantastic at creating these bubbles...
Yeah.
Maintaining the bubble in hospitality is going to be much, much harder because you have the whole world and coming into the lobby and leaving again during the whole day.
Yeah. And if we look at the lobby and what you've just explained, people coming and people leaving, would you agree that because of the way the world works now and there's obviously media and social media and everything else that's out there, has it been more difficult to create this, or has it become more difficult to create this unique experience for guests because there's so much choice and variety, and at the click of a button they can basically walk through your hotel in China virtually without having been there? Or has it, or is that, in your opinion, and the reason I'm asking this is heading a little bit towards modernity, how difficult is it for you to balance the heritage of Kempinski with modern, I'm not even going to say standards, but you know
elements.
What I mean. Yeah, elements.
With relevance of today. So first of all, in a world in which everything is available and everything is a click away, the importance of filters, curators becomes
detrimental.
Because, you know, we can all find whatever we want.
Yeah.
But it is the curation for us that is actually something that is much more elusive.
Yeah.
So in this sense, again, and this is part of the opportunity at Kempinski. Kempinski was the original curator.
Yeah.
I mean, they were curating the good life for Germans before they even knew what the good life was.
Yeah.
So this role of being a curational brand versus a service brand is fundamental.
Mm.
And this is one difference that I think we have. The second thing is that, again, in this world in which everything is a click away, human connections are becoming much more important.
Mm.
So while AI is making huge changes in our world, you know, actually the importance of the human connection is increasing and not decreasing.
Yeah.
And hospitality at the core is a business of people.
You will not know this, but I will share a secret with you. When I was at the tender age of 16, and as we just learned, it wasn't too long ago, I started my career with Kempinski. This was as a bellboy. I earned a little bit of cash on the side while going to school. This was a hotel up in Frankfurt. It's unfortunately no longer part of the
Gravenbruch.
Falkenstein one. It's unfortunately no longer part of the portfolio, but that was my first Kempinski experience. And to this day, I remember the essence of welcoming a guest, and it's something that we were taught very early, even as bellboys at the time. And I was wondering if you would tell me, how do you see the idea of welcome or bringing guests into your hotel and then the welcome experience as a whole? How do you see that progressing? Because I've seen a lot of things now, and there's been some conversations as well and some of the elusive luxury trade shows of the world in the hospitality business where, you know, people are now also getting, especially in luxury space, getting to your hotels in very different ways. There's the commercial airlines, there's private airlines, there's a whole variety of different places of getting to you. How is that going to change? Because we've talked a lot about the brand now and the essence behind it. Let's talk about the guest. Has that changed at all?
So again, I think that it goes back to who you are. So I think that particularly in, let me say, hotels, there are three different categories of, in general, arrival experience, let's call them. One, the hotels that are by definition sanctuaries.
Yeah.
So they're actually close to the world.
Yeah.
If you are a paid guest, you're allowed in.
Mm-hmm.
that will always be a very intimate and solitary, by definition, by design, experience. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know, it is a great, serving a great...
Exclusivity in one
way. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to name competitors, but but you can immediately know who I'm thinking of. There are a lot of brands that are closed to the world.
Yeah.
Then there are the brands that are open to the world. Mm. So Kempinski, for example, will always be open. One of the things that we always say to our GMs, Kempinskis are open to the city, are open to the destination. Mm. Anybody, and this is something that we are working on in product development, we are working on trolleys that the whole day, for example, will welcome guests, not paying guests to the hotel, guests that just go through the lobby. Mm. Because in if we go back to the original spirit of Kempinski, a successful Kempinski is in Europe with Americans sleeping in the rooms and the local elite in the lobby. Mm. That's what you want to have.
Very interesting. Okay.
Because Kempinski will always be open to the... The third type of hotels are the hotels that are relying less on service and more on automation. That is, those are the hotels that work more on the original function of the hotel. I need a place to sleep.
Yeah.
And in those cases, I think we will see that thanks to technology, you don't even want to see a human being, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Through your phone, you just whip in and get to a clean room.
Yeah.
So that's why I divided it up in three different categories, because it depends where you want to play.
Okay. And Kempinski is very clearly positioned right in the second category.
For me, it's 100%. I will definitely fire anybody who considers a Kempinski close to the city.
Okay. Yeah. You clear. I hope you took note of that. Barbara, just like that, 30 minutes have passed, and I know that you have places to go. So we have about 5 or 7 more minutes that I want to use for three things. First of all, I want to play a little game with you at the end, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Before we play the game, I would love to hear your opinion on the future. We've talked a lot about the past heritage and so on and so forth. Now, walk me through, and again, geopolitically, I think we're all praying for the fact that the world becomes a little bit more peaceful in every part of it. But walk me through, what are we going to see? And I'll take two answers from you. One Kempinski and one luxury hospitality space. What are we seeing in the next year or two? What are some things that you guys also in Geneva or in the Dubai office are preparing for in the next 12 to 24 months?
So Kempinski is going asset heavy.
Yeah.
So you will start seeing very soon announcements about Kempinski acquiring properties.
Okay.
The main reason why we're going asset heavy is because we want to offer a unique collection of hotels around the world. To do that, you need to control the asset to a broader extent that very often HMAs allow you to.
Yeah.
So in order to really show the Kempinskiness
of
and
the
how we are still a relevant brand, an incredibly relevant brand today, that is one thing that you will see more and more. In terms of luxury, you know, again, I am trying to track how many logos are launched every month. And I'm afraid that if I need to do one prediction, you will see a lot of a sea of sameness in this industry. Because, I mean, I hope that's not the game. But if you ask me to start rolling all of the luxury brands that just were launched in the last year, I would fail miserably.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me a thing or two about the asset heavy strategy, then, because it's something that a lot of your competitors, if we want to call them that, are not doing, and quite deliberately so, have been working very hard to become as asset light as possible with some workarounds. Then sometimes there's another company that is owned by the same group that then has the assets. But generally, the idea has been asset light. I understand the point that you make of we can be a bit more Kempinski-ish if we, you know, have the full ownership. Is there what else can you tell us about that step?
So I would say I don't necessarily need full ownership, I need full control.
Oh, full control, fair.
Which is different.
True. Yeah.
And you know, it all goes back to capital structure.
Yeah.
If you are a public company, being asset heavy, it's very capital intensive. So it is the best thing to do if you're a public company is to be asset light.
Yeah.
In my case, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know? And which was also one of the things that attracted me to Kempinski.
Yeah.
We are a very well-funded private company. In which the owners own other assets.
Yeah.
So for us, it is a different perspective. And in this case, because at the core of our business, there is the luxury desiring of creating these unique experiences in luxury, having control over the asset is more important than not our capital structure.
Yeah. Would you say, I read an interview from you not too long ago where you discussed also the idea of potentially moving the head office from Geneva or at least attributing part of it to the GCC. Would you say that relationship, owner relationship, is key as well, probably more so now than it has ever been? Because there was also a time I remember very clearly and not so long ago where there was a lot of independence given to management and the ownership perhaps was not as much involved.
So I always managed companies very, very close to the ownership and the stakeholders. This is fundamental because at the end of the day, management is mandated to do, you know, what the stakeholders and shareholders want to do.
Yeah.
So right now, the Dubai office has same, if not some more people than the Geneva office.
Yeah.
This is also due of how the job market evolved.
Yeah.
It is easier to find certain skills in Dubai versus Geneva.
Yeah.
So it is also depending of what kind of skills we want to integrate
into the
brand
ecospace.
More.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Before we play our favorite game on Smack, a final question from me, Barbara. You've been around, you've been traveling quite a bit from what I've heard from your team and also from Kirsty. You've seen the world. Give me your favorite moment of the past 2 years. Is there anything, and this is a completely, we did not prepare you for this question, I can tell this to the camera. Is there a moment that stuck with you where you thought, wow, this is a truly special, and it can be anything. It can be from a taxi ride to a stay at one of your hotels to a dinner.
Well, actually, I think I there was a very special moment, and I was in Antarctica, and you know, an orca whale came by, and the penguin, to escape the orca whale, jumped on
onto
the Zodiac.
Your boat. Oh,
and
wow.
I have this video of the penguin looking at the passengers, looking at the orca, at the passengers, looking at the orca.
Yeah.
And he's like, what do I do? Do I go back in the water or do I stay here? And at the end, the penguin just decided to ride with us.
Yeah.
And it was just so cool. Because I could see the penguin strategizing.
Yeah.
Who are all of these weird people here? But there's that big thing there. It was just an incredible moment of connection with a different species.
Wow. What a moment.
Yeah. And the penguin did the right thing.
I mean, the penguin definitely
was obviously very hungry.
The penguin did the right thing. Do you still have the video?
Yes, I do.
Maybe we can blend it into this post where we publish it, because that's a great...
I promise you, I will find it for
perfect.
You. I know where to find
that's
it.
That's lovely. Barbara, that's great. Thank you so much. Final game that we like to play on Smack before we let you go. We have a game that's called Book, Buy, and Bulldoze. And I'm going to give you, and disclaimer now for everyone, this is a game we play on Smack. It's not Barbara's official opinion. But what I would love to do with you is I would love to give you three hotel brands that are not Kempinski.
Okay.
And you get to book one, so stay in one. You get to buy the other and integrate it into your portfolio. And one, unfortunately, needs to go.
Okay.
That's unfortunately how the game goes. And the three brands, obviously we made it difficult for you because we know that you like a challenge. We asked around. So here are the three brands you get to choose from. You get to choose between our dear friends from Four Seasons. You get to choose between Corinthia Hotels because it's where we first met. So I had to include that one. And you get to choose as a third one between Mandarin Oriental.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. I would bulldozer Four Seasons.
Okay.
Because the world needs more color and less beige.
Okay. Very good.
I would definitely book Mandarin Oriental.
Yeah.
And I would buy Corinthian.
Very good. We don't tell Simon.
I mean, I love Simon as well. We're very compatible companies.
Yeah. And he's a good guy as well.
So if I could afford it, I would definitely.
You would go for Simon's brand. Very good. Barbara, thank you so much for your time. A pleasure to have you. We will reconnect in 12 months and see what the sea of brands has, how it's developed and whether you were right with your prediction. Mm-hmm. Have a great IHIF. Thank you again for your time.
And thank you for having me. It was a really fun
conversation. It was a fun half an hour. It was indeed. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.